As of tomorrow, the three clinics left in Kansas that still provide abortions must meet strict new, nearly impossible licensing guidelines or close. One has already failed. In Ohio, lawmakers are looking to ban abortions after the sixth week, before many women even know they're pregnant, and also a direct challenge to the Supreme Court decision, which puts the ban, with some exceptions, at around the 24th week. Today we want to take a look at how several states with newly elected Republican legislatures are chipping away at choice. And we start in Indiana, one of six states looking to cut Medicaid funds to Planned Parenthood, which provides abortions in addition to cancer screenings and family planning. Now, Washington gives Medicaid funds to the states, which then give them out. But Indiana passed a law denying any Medicaid funding to entities that provide abortions except for hospitals. Last Friday, a judge temporarily blocked the Indiana law, saying it violated federal law, which allows Medicaid patients to choose their own provider. And the judge also noted only a small percentage of Planned Parenthood services involve abortions. Heather Gillers is with the Indianapolis Star. Heather, take us back. What happened on May 10th when Republican Governor Mitch Daniels signed this into law?
Initially, there was an outpouring of donations. About $100,000 came into Planned Parenthood of Indiana from other states and countries. That allowed Planned Parenthood to continue serving its 9,300 Medicaid patients for several weeks. But a couple days before the judge issued the injunction, Planned Parenthood ran out of money and actually had to turn away Medicaid patients.
And weren't there also some layoffs?
Yes. Two specialists who did work preventing the spread of sexually transmitted diseases were laid off. They've now been rehired.
Well, it's interesting because the judge, Tanya Walton Pratt, who's a federal judge there in Indianapolis, noted that there would be donations initially, but that they would dry up. What else was her rationale? What else was her thinking?
Most of her reason for putting the law on hold was that federal Medicaid rules prohibit picking and choosing between providers where Medicaid patients can receive family planning services.
The judge also noted the battle between the Justice Department and the state. The Justice Department had threatened to cut off all Medicaid funding to the state, and she pretty much said the public interest here tilted in favor of Planned Parenthood. Tell us more about that.
That's right. She said she didn't want low-income Hoosiers to become pawns, basically, in an ideological battle between the state and the federal government.
What is the state of Indiana saying is rationale for it cutting the funds?
The state argued in court that the Medicaid program is more of a contract between the federal government and the state government, and the state has the authority to administrate its own Medicaid program and make its own rules.
Well, isn't it true that federal dollars are already not allowed to go to abortion procedures except in the case of rape or incest or if the mother's life is endangered? So these Medicaid dollars going from the federal government to the state and on to Planned Parenthood would not be going to abortion services anyway.
That's right. That's an important distinction. And the way that the supporters of this defund Planned Parenthood law, which there were many in the Indiana legislature, because as you point out, we had a Republican sweep in 2010, the supporters of this law argued that they don't want tax dollars going to an organization that provides abortions, even though the tax dollars aren't going directly to abortions. They don't want tax dollars going to Planned Parenthood because it separately provides abortions.
Well, and we understand that, people also feel that these dollars are fungible, that it may go to another aspect of the organization, but that that in some way allows them to use other dollars for the abortion services.
Yes, that's true. And some lawmakers don't believe Planned Parenthood when it says that Medicaid dollars don't go to abortions. They're suspicious about that. But Planned Parenthood is audited by a contractor with the federal government.
Huh. Well, this is part of a wave of attempts to undercut a woman's ability to choose an abortion, including requiring women in some states to have ultrasounds, have a waiting period before the abortion. In Kansas, providers there are being required to meet new licensing requirements. Then there's a new law in Indiana and five other states banning abortions at the 20th week. This is based on a theory that the fetus can feel pain at that time, something the preponderance of science disputes. And this 20-week law conflicts with the Supreme Court ruling that abortion can't be banned until the fetus becomes viable, is able to survive outside the womb, and that's thought to be around 24 weeks. So this law is pretty much, in effect, challenging that Supreme Court ruling. So here you have Indiana at the center of that new law, as well as the attempt to restrict funds to Planned Parenthood. What's been the reaction to all of this there in Indiana?
Well, that 20-week portion of the law is not being challenged, and so it goes straight into effect. But we're beginning to hear from the medical community, which was basically excluded from the legislative process in Indiana. And this 20-week law really takes something that was previously determined by a doctor, viability, out of the doctor's hands and puts it on the law books. And I actually interviewed the lawmaker who wrote the language about fetal pain, and she said that she hadn't talked to any doctors or scientists or consulted any scientific studies in writing the language.
Have you come across any people who are actually living out some of these stories? The New York Times recently had a story about a couple in Nebraska told that the fetus was dying, wanted to have the procedure, but doctors there, where they also have the same 20-week law, felt they couldn't do it. It would be against the law. And this woman is now saying she felt this was a terrible imposition on her when she was in such agony over what was happening to her pregnancy. Has anyone actually been affected by the law there yet?
Well, not by the 20-week law, because that goes into effect July 1. But the defund Planned Parenthood law actually had some of those same unintended consequences. As you mentioned, there was an exception for hospitals, but Indiana University School of Medicine faculty practice is a private practice with doctors who work inside the hospitals, but the doctors themselves aren't employed by the hospitals.
Oh.
Their attorneys found that they actually didn't fit under the exemption and that these doctors were at risk of losing their Medicaid funding even if they performed the kinds of procedures you just mentioned where there's a rupture at 16 weeks and the woman loses fluid. Basically, it's impossible for the pregnancy to result in a live birth, and terminating that pregnancy averts risks of infection to the woman. During the time the defund Planned Parenthood law was in effect until the judge put it on hold, IU Hospital and Wishard Hospital in Indianapolis were actually having to not do these procedures and to send some women out of state because they feared that they would not fit under the hospital exemption and that if they terminated those pregnancies, they would lose their Medicaid funding. And of course, a substantial number of those hospital patients are Medicaid patients. Risking losing Medicaid was not really something the hospitals could do.
So obviously this is a story that goes on there. That's Heather Gillers of the Indianapolis Star in Indiana, commenting on the new laws there regarding abortion. Heather, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Eric Eckholm is national correspondent for the New York Times. Eric, in Ohio, we're hearing even some anti-abortion activists are worried that 6-week restriction goes too far.
Well, I think this 6-week heartbeat bill is not going to succeed, and it certainly would be voided by the Supreme Court. The real action is in the fetal pain laws. They're the real frontier for both sides right now. But really, this has been a banner year for the anti-abortion movement. There were newly conservative state governments and governors elected all over the country last November, and there have been so far something like 76 different laws passed that restrict abortion in some way. They range from waiting periods to requiring women to view a sonogram and have the doctor explain in detail, you know, different parts of the fetus, how many fingers you can see and so on, cuts in funding like we've seen in Indiana, very onerous regulations about clinic size and facilities and which doctors must be present.
That's in Kansas. And you also write about, in South Dakota, a 72-hour waiting period. You mentioned the sonogram requirements. Those are in Texas and Oklahoma. There's also a requirement that patients go to private anti-abortion clinics before their procedures. That's in South Dakota. So what is happening legally, though? How many of these have been challenged?
Well, some of the more rigorous sonogram requirements in Texas and Oklahoma, where the doctor's actually required to show it to the mother and discuss it with her, those are both under legal challenge on the grounds that they interfere with the doctor-patient relationship and they require a doctor to do things and say things that might not be in his best professional judgment. There is a challenge in South Dakota to this requirement, first of a 72-hour waiting period, which really is quite onerous in that state because I think right now there's only one place that even does abortions, and it means people might have to travel across the state two different times. And secondly, there's a challenge to the requirement that they go to one of these so-called pregnancy crisis centers, which are not really regulated. They're private, and they're run by abortion opponents, and sometimes have been seen to give very unsound medical information and advice, and their whole goal is to talk a woman out of an abortion.
Well, have you found in your reporting what we've been hearing, which is that abortion rights supporters are afraid of taking some of these restrictions to court for fear that it will make its way up to this particular Supreme Court, which they feel will overturn Roe v. Wade?
I think that's a bit exaggerated. Maybe afraid is the wrong term, but they're proceeding very cautiously. With things like the sonogram requirements and the extended waiting period and some other measures, there's been no hesitancy. I mean, there are a number of lawsuits underway now, and a lot of these laws actually have been enjoined by, you know, state or local federal courts. They haven't come into effect because of these suits. The big one is fetal pain, and I should say this one differs. These are laws that would ban abortion after 20 weeks based on the theory that the fetus can feel pain at that point. Now, the very foundation of current law in the United States on abortion that started with Roe v. Wade was that a woman has a right to an abortion up to the point at which the fetus becomes viable. And in Roe, I think they said this means at 24 weeks. Then in a later decision, they said, no, this varies with the individual case and medical technology. The doctor should determine this. And this is often anywhere from 22 to really 28 weeks after conception, but often around 24 weeks. So these laws that are based on a theory of fetal pain, which I should say that theory is not accepted by mainstream medicine. There are a few scientists out there who are claiming that they've shown that with less than full brain development, there is something still we could call pain. But major medical societies in the United States and Britain have all concluded, first of all, pain requires perception. Until the brain has developed to a certain level with a functioning cortex, which is at least at 24 weeks and maybe later, it's really improper to use the word pain. But anyway, the advocates say we have this evidence of pain, and they've convinced six different state legislatures to, on that basis, bar abortions after 20 weeks. Now, this doesn't really affect a huge number of women or abortions. It's less than 2% occur that late in pregnancy. But in terms of the law and in terms of the politics and public perceptions of abortion, it's very important. And the anti-abortion groups are quite excited by this. It's their biggest new priority is to get these laws passed in more states, because what they say is, you know, just getting the public to think about is this, as they would put it, unborn child feeling pain, you know, being tortured, they hope will change the large middle ground in America that doesn't have really strong views one way or another. They hope it will influence more of them to become anti-abortion.
So again, these who are proposing the 20 weeks aren't really talking about viability as much as they're talking about, as you said, pain and this sense of making people think of the fetus differently. What do you think happens if this makes its way to the Supreme Court?
Well, first of all, it clearly, under current Supreme Court decisions and the law of the nation, these are unconstitutional because the court has said viability should be the threshold at which a state can very, very severely restrict abortions, except in, you know, medical exceptions. You know, the Supreme Court now is quite split. There are four members who are very anti-abortion, probably would support such a law, four members who support abortion rights and almost certainly would not, and then one justice in the center, Kennedy. So the opponents are waiting for a really good case. I mean, in the case of the couple in Nebraska, she had to carry a dying fetus for 10 weeks rather than inducing abortion, and that was awful. But, you know, it might be if it had been a much longer period and she had suffered really severe health consequences, it would be a much stronger case.
Eric Eckholm, national correspondent for The New York Times. Fascinating, though. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.